Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
There's something unique about pheasant season in South Dakota. It's the plains and the people. The action and relaxing. It's black coffee in the morning and colder drinks when the day's done. South Dakota hunts are doing what you love most with the people you love best. Out here in the finest pheasant habitat on planet Earth. Enter for a chance to win a South Dakota hunt for you and your crew, plus free Shields gear at huntthegreatestsd.com.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. For Cup 1 today, we're going to talk to Secretary of State Steve Simon. He announced this week that he's running for re-election in 2022. And Minnesota has a long tradition of trusted elections, but yet we're in an era where in a poll this week from the Star Tribune, Care 11, and NPR, there's a good percentage of Minnesotans that don't trust the results of the 2020 federal election. And I wonder kind of how that plays in Minnesota. And so no better guest than Secretary of State Simon. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So let's just start. You announced you're running for re-election. Was there ever a doubt in your mind that you were going to run for re-election? Because I know that the 2020 election, from an administrating the election standpoint, regardless of the politics of it, was a pretty big lift during a pandemic.
Yeah, it was a pretty big lift. 2020 was a stress test for all of us, certainly in the elections business. But we passed that stress test and passed it with flying colors. Minnesota, third time in a row, number one in the country in voter turnout. But as to me running for re-election, no, there really never was a doubt. The work is more urgent than ever. Democracy needs defending. Nobody does democracy better than Minnesota. All of our people, red, blue, and otherwise, lean in. And that work has to continue. And I would say with a fresh urgency. So I think the work is important. I'm excited about the work, and we've got work to do.
One of the things that came out of the 2020 election, but it was kind of previewed beforehand, was that, you know, there were some issues of attempts to hack our system, just set the stage about kind of how the system works in Minnesota so that people understand that when they see headlines about hacking, you know, from foreign interests or otherwise, the level that your office, and in working with Homeland Security, even during the Trump administration, worked to kind of, you know, push back those attacks.
Yeah, well, really, the defining moment was 2016. In 2016, Minnesota was one of 21 states whose election systems, like the infrastructure, the databases, that kind of thing, were targeted by a foreign government, by the Russian government. That was the wake-up call to everyone. And by the way, the system worked. Nobody got in. The bad guys stayed out. And that's great. But we were all on notice all over this country that that was something we had to guard against. Cybersecurity in general, whether it's WCCO or the University of Minnesota or U.S. Bank or Target, it's a race without a finish line. Always. You got to stay one step ahead of the bad guys. And in the 4 years between 2016 and 2020, as you correctly said, we collaborated, not just our office, but all secretaries of state, collaborated with the federal government. And I have to give bipartisan credit where it's due here. The Trump administration was extremely helpful, extremely useful. The Department of Homeland Security and the leadership under the prior administration were really great partners with us in keeping our election system safe from outside intrusion. The good news is in 2020, once again, we kept the bad guys out. We did not see, or the intelligence community did not see, the level of assault or anything like it of what occurred in 2016, probably in part because of our efforts, but that's good. Minnesotans should know that we are working every day with intelligence partners, Department of Homeland Security, FBI counterintelligence. We're getting actionable intel and technological know-how from them. So the systems, I'm talking about the databases, the equipment, things like that, are safe. But as I said, it's a race without a finish line. You know, I can't look anyone in the eye and say there's 100% chance everything will go smoothly and that nothing will go wrong. Nobody can say that. Nobody in any organization in America now can say that. But what we can say is that we're working every day really intensely to ward off the threats and to try to stay one step ahead of the bad guys.
Lois Olson here on Sunday Take. Guest is Steve Simon, Secretary of State. Let's pivot to running in a partisan election. You're a Democrat. You've been a DFL state rep. You've run as a Democrat. Why? I mean, in these highly polarized times, any concern about kind of partisanship in the Secretary of State's office or amongst election officials nationally? Just because I think, again, we've had it really well in Minnesota, but more of that polarization and nationalization is creeping in to Minnesota. Even we see it in Georgia or in Florida, where Secretary of States are highly partisan. Any concerns about a partisan battle for Secretary of State in 2022?
I think it is essential that whoever holds this office be that nonpartisan, trusted voice for the system and for the voters, regardless of their political philosophy. I am always ready to work with anyone of any political persuasion from any part of our state to strengthen our system. And it is improper, I would say, disqualifying for anyone in this office or seeking this office to promise to put their thumb on the scale for any political party, any campaign, and so forth. And I don't do that. In fact, I wear as a badge of honor the fact that I've been sued multiple times by my own political party, and I've won, taking it all the way to the Supreme Court. It doesn't matter to me what someone's political party is or who outside actors are. The most important thing is the integrity in the system, and to guard against any outside influences that would take us off the path, which you say correctly, we've enjoyed in Minnesota, which is one of a high degree of confidence.
What do we say to the people who are doubtful about elections, either because of misinformation? Because I think there's going to be a more robust conversation about these things. Republicans have also said they're going to run on voter ID and election security next year. Where do you, you know, start to talk to people who do doubt the system, who question the system, who have questions about the 2020 election? 30% of greater Minnesota voters polled this week say they didn't believe the 2020 presidential results. That's, to me, concerning. And it bellies the question, how do you have a conversation if people don't trust the results?
Yeah, it's a knotty, tough problem. And what I would say is this. There are a lot of people, good people, who have unfortunately been misled by those political actors who, either for political reasons, sometimes for financial reasons, sometimes for both, have spun this story, have spread this deception and this disinformation about the 2020 election. And let me just say what the truth is. The truth is that the 2020 election in Minnesota and nationally was fundamentally fair, accurate, honest, and secure. And that's not just my opinion. That's what former Attorney General William Barr has said, appointed by the former president. That's what the current FBI director, appointed by the former president, has said under oath numerous times in congressional testimony. And that's what dozens and dozens of state and federal judges appointed by governors and presidents of both party, including the former president, have also said unanimously when presented time and time and again with allegations of misconduct or wrongdoing. So there's a wall of facts and information that contradicts this claim that there was something sinister going on. And this was let's face it, the most watched, scrutinized, and litigated election in the history of the United States of America. In Minnesota, we're lucky that before, during, and after elections, we have robust and totally transparent processes. For example, I don't know that your listeners know this. This is obscure, but I think an important point. We have something in Minnesota called a public accuracy test. Sounds like some, you know, boring government process. What it means is every jurisdiction in Minnesota must make available to the public an opportunity to come in before the election and kick the tires, so to speak, of all the elections equipment. I've gone to these things. They're sparsely attended, as you might think. Anybody in Minnesota who has doubt about election machines, call your county or city and ask when their next public accuracy test is. It's mandatory. It's totally open to the public, not just journalists, not just election people. Any person off the street can walk in and watch them put every single machine through the paces. So it sounds like some boring process, but in Minnesota, we have a very transparent process before, during, and after, and one that I think engenders great trust. And let me just say, Blois, if I may, I don't want to hijack your question, but you're right about that Star Tribune poll. That poll, though, was not a Minnesota-related question. It asked about, generally, do you have confidence in the results? It didn't say in Minnesota or anything like that.
Yep.
But here's one of the fair measurements, and there are many, but one of the fair measurements of confidence and trust in the system is turnout. I really think that's true. We were number one in America at just shy of 80%. That is a huge number, and I don't think that people in Minnesota, left, right, red, blue, whatever, would show up time and time again in such high numbers, so consistently, if they really thought the system fundamentally was anything other than honest. Keep in mind, it's a decentralized system. Our office, the Secretary of State's office, we don't touch ballots. We never lay a finger on any ballot. All that work happens by the frontline folks, tens of thousands of them in counties, in cities, in townships, non-political folks, civil service people who do a really good job under quite a microscope. So we have a good system, and I think Minnesotans, even those who have strong suggestions about changes in direction in our system or policies they'd like to see, those are all totally open for debate. But even those folks know fundamentally it is an honest system and one of integrity. And we know that because people keep showing up in droves time after time after time.
Secretary of State Steve Simon, thanks for being on Sunday Take, and hope you enjoy a weekend with your family.
Thanks, Blois.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Joining me for the second cup this morning is Steve Hunnig. Steve is the executive director of the Jewish Community Relations Council. He's a longtime friend. And full disclosure, he was once the Little League coach of my son. We like to be transparent here, Steve. I don't want anybody to think that I'm just having friends on, because I'm pretty sure that one day you made a coaching decision I disagreed with. And I want people to know I'm objective. But in all sincerity, it's been a big week for politics related to Israel. And there's no better person that I'd like to kind of talk about that with than you. So thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Blois, and all the best to Jack. We loved coaching him, loved connecting with the family. And that's the beauty of St. Louis Park Little League, friends and family and everybody trying their best to help the kids, right?
Exactly. So in what would be a usually routine passage of a bill, the funding of protection, military protection and technology for Israel got stripped out and became a big national story, which with a lot of Minnesota players, by the way, between Representative Omar, Representative McCollum, Representative Phillips, just on the Democratic side. Did you hear that this could become an issue, or did it surprise you the way it kind of got stripped out of the original bill?
There had been rumblings that there might be some issues associated with the Iron Dome appropriation. And then we saw what unfolded last week, and you correctly earlier in the week characterized it as a set piece with any number of Minnesota players. Let's go to sort of the end of the story first, Blois, because yeah. I wanted to emphasize the positive and the fact that 402 members of Congress, you rarely get 402 members of Congress to agree upon anything, all ultimately voted in favor of the Iron Dome appropriation. And talk about bipartisanship in a capital in an era when bipartisanship is often in short supply. This was very important to see, and talk about bipartisanship at the national level, our regional level. Remember, we're Minnesota, North Dakota, and South Dakota, and Minnesota also. And so you know what that means for the varied political perspectives of the 10 members of Congress from the three states. So let's start with the good news, okay? And we appreciate the leadership of Representative Phillips, Representative Emmer, Representative McCollum, all those who voted for the Iron Dome appropriation. But back to the question after that, at least endgame context. What we're seeing now is a narrow band of Democrats, so-called progressives, who have an animus towards Israel. There's no other way to express it. Let's look at the facts here. Iron Dome saves lives. Iron Dome saves Israelis' lives. Iron Dome saves Israelis' lives, whether they're Palestinian or Israeli, residents of Israel, citizens of Israel, all those who live within the borders of Israel. Iron Dome saves Gazans' lives, because God forbid we should ever see an Iron Dome, a Hamas rocket strike some installation, some piece of Israel, some school, some nursery, some place crowded with people, killing many and wounding many. You can only imagine what the result of, what the level of engagement of Israel would be with respect to Gaza, something we would never want to see. So, as they say, it should be something of a no-brainer to support the Iron Dome appropriation. You may have seen, Blois, that Representative McCollum was pointed in her questions that she asked during the debate. And the question she was asking, is this for defensive purposes? And, of course, the response was yes. And that's another point. This is for defensive purposes for Israel. Representative McCollum, who we said in our statement, with whom we have sometimes significant disagreements over Middle East issues, you know, recognizes the importance of this for Israel's self-defense and for the security of the entire region. You know, one more point. When you're talking about Iron Dome, for whom is it that Israel is defending itself? Well, Israel is sort of cheek-to-cheek, jowl-to-jowl with pathological, ruthless, vicious enemies who are proxies of Iran: Islamic Jihad, Hamas, Hezbollah in Lebanon. So to vote against this, boys, to vote against this appropriation is to somehow cast your lot with some of the worst actors in the Middle East. I'm not saying that's necessarily the intention of those who opposed it, but it's the consequence of it. So I'm sorry for that long-winded answer, but I wanted to put it in context.
No, I think that's good. And I appreciate you focusing on the fact that it did pass, because we do have to acknowledge bipartisan issues these days, because there don't seem to be a lot of them. But is there any, do you have any sense, Steve, about kind of where the animus has taken hold and why, you know, anti-Semitism obviously is something we're all aware of, but the animus amongst our elected officials is something that I can't think of where or how this kind of came about. And I'm not saying it's like surprising to me. I think that the idea that it's gotten traction amongst so-called progressives, as you say, and where's their foundation there? Is there a different debate people are having that we're not seeing?
Great question. Again, not to not to quarrel with my good friend Blaise Olson, but narrowband. Remember, it's a very small number of members of Congress.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Let's just make sure that we emphasize that point. Nevertheless,
well, as I often say these days, narrow but loud.
Yeah.
And just because somebody's loud doesn't mean people are following them. But I want to acknowledge that I say that often, like, just because they're loud doesn't mean you need to pay attention. But in this case, I think people are curious and want to know more.
And by the way, you need to pay attention, because first of all, it represents something different right now and perhaps into the future. Two, people coming to the Congress with different perspectives, important to know it. Three, loud and substantive in the sense that a lot of followers on social media, and social media is an influence, is important in the realm of politics these days, and none of this can be denied. And to do otherwise is to ignore what is upon us. Back to your question, though, Blois, about the source of the animus or the disagreements. And part of it is sociological. People coming to the Congress, younger, who may not have the historical grounding that those of us perhaps raised a generation earlier do. When it comes to Israel, people who haven't lived through sort of the formative issues of World War II, the aftermath of the Holocaust, the establishment of the State of Israel, Israel's struggles throughout the various conflicts, Camp David, 1979, Oslo, 1993, etc., all of which are remarkably, you know, formative issues when it comes to people's opinions. You know, on top of that, Israel is not perfect. All you have to do is gaze upon Israeli democracy to see the free flow, and it's a wonderful thing, of the various political parties in Israel. And it's no secret that the new Prime Minister of Israel, Prime Minister Bennett, Yair Lapid, the foreign minister, have been strongly critical of the way they're in their belief that Prime Minister Netanyahu ignored, if not worse, the Democratic Party during his time, often pointing to things like Prime Minister Netanyahu's speech before Congress in connection with the JCPOA, the Iran agreement involving its nuclear weapons, as salient moments in the history of U.S.-Israel relations, particularly damaging in the eyes of people like Yair Lapid and Prime Minister Bennett, relations with the Democratic Party. Okay. Yeah. So some of this is an outgrowth of perhaps mistakes, misjudgments by the Israeli government as characterized by the current government towards the past government. So let's keep that in mind.
Yeah, no, I think that's really good context, because, you know, the lens that I look at everything through is American politics or Minnesota politics. And so I didn't see that lens. That's really helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, and other factors, too, you know, the Democratic Party has moved further to the left, or at least some segments, the activist class in particular, has moved for that. And it's a class of, you know, folks that generally have more sympathy for the Palestinians. You know, listen, the JCRC is long on record as being two-state solution. You know, interestingly, when we brought we have every other year trip to Israel for elected officials, members of the legislatures, opinion leaders, you should join us sometime.
I will
that
promise,
trip.
Anytime you invite me, I will come.
You, that come along. On my bucket. We met with Yair Lapid, and you know, he actually, so interestingly, he really knew Minnesota politics well and done his homework and was talking about Hubert Humphrey and the like. The point being that, you know, this recognition that Israel has to work harder with the Democratic Party is something that many Israeli elected officials are seeing. But you look at politics, our country is in some ways growing younger, particularly in the activist class, are becoming minority, majority, many districts, and people have different views towards the Middle East and towards Israel.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as I am critical of some of these views that are sometimes at odds with members of Congress over these views, it's also the future, right? And American democracy is about the expression of other ideas, even those with ones where even ideas like opposing the Iron Dome appropriation with whom we profoundly disagreed. Nevertheless, you have to engage on the issue. Nobody is guaranteed any legislative victories at any time. You have to work for it and make your case at all times. So you know, this is something that we all have to grapple with.
And I think that's a good point. And this might be the, just as we wrap here, Steve, how do you engage and what do people need to know about how they can engage through some of your programs in education so that other people can build knowledge or share knowledge from JCRC with the rest of their friends, family, and others?
Some of the items we're talking about right now, we're seeing them in our younger members of our community. Again, you know, for historical reasons or sociological reasons, that the younger you go, generally, not exclusively, but generally in the Jewish community, younger folks having their own qualms or reservations or concerns about Israel. One thing that we're doing, we have there's a book, you'll see Klein Halevi sort of informally bookmark it called Letters to a Palestinian Friend. And Yossi will be in town actually October 12th for a talk over at Hillel. Is from the Hartman Institute, is a wonderfully erudite person who really dives deep into Israeli-Palestinian issues. And as a community, the Jewish community, it's important for us to appreciate the Palestinian narrative, to understand the points of view of the Palestinians so that we can sort of strengthen our own identity, but try to do our own part in order to find more common ground between Israelis and the Palestinians. As you know, Blois, nobody over the years really, at least at a local level, has been more critical on certain issues than myself.
Right.
In connection with Representative Omar. In particular, you know, our statement associated with her no vote on Iron Dome, which is something that it's hard, as I said, it's hard to have a relationship with her or others in that ilk going forward, considering what it meant for Israel's self-defense and a vote of negation against Israel's right for self-defense. But putting that all aside, as important as that is, you know, we have to, as a community, also grapple with Israeli and Palestinian issues too. And, you know, back to your question, you know, this is something that we're working with across the community and other states too, with this Letters to a Palestinian Friend, because it is an important book for helping us, you know, wrestle with these issues as a community. And it makes us a stronger community too, to try to, you know, come to terms with some of the very complicated issues involving Israel and Palestine.
Got it. Steve Hunnigs has been our guest here on Sunday Take. And we appreciate his time on the issue of Israel, the politics of it, and offering us a new perspective. I will guess that even though you're a big Gopher fan, you might tune into the Ryder Cup later today, Steve. So I will text you later with any golf drama that we can share.
Well, there's much happening, Blois, as ever. Thank you for your important contributions to civility and community discussions on a range of important issues. This has been your beat for many years, and appreciate it very much. So thank you.
Thank you. When we come back, the Coffee Klatch with Laura McCollum and Mary LaHammer. We'll dive into all things Minnesota politics this week and next week, including will Peggy Flanagan run with Governor Walz. Blois Olson on News Talk 830 WCCO.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome back to News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take. It was called Sunday Brew, but the lawyers made me change it. And the best part of the week, Coffee Clatch, I am joined by Star Tribune editor Laura McCollum and TPT, or Public Television's, longtime political reporter, Mary Lou Hammer.
Hello.
Women, thanks for joining me.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Absolutely. So, with coffee in hand.
Yes. It's good to have coffee on a Sunday morning and read the paper. Laura, we're going to start with you. You and the Star Tribune had awesome content this week with 5 or 6 days of polls. And it ended with the idea that, you know, we've all watched governors over the state, that Tim Walz isn't as popular as he once was, but he's not necessarily unpopular. What were your big takeaways from the polls that you guys did this week?
Well, you know, I think the overall theme is that Minnesota, like the rest of the country, is totally divided. Yeah. We are divided by gender. We're divided by geography. We're divided by politics. We're divided by race. And that's not new in this climate, but you just saw it day after day, just this, almost every headline was Minnesotans divided. And even the Minneapolis polls, just focusing on Minneapolis and these ballot measures, very divided. So then we get to Walz. His approval rating, it has slipped below 50%. When I looked back at the history in May of 2020, so, you know, a year and a few yeah. months ago, that was when it spiked. It was at about 65%, right when the pandemic was, you know, sort of in the throes. We were all on lockdown, and then it went down to 57% in September, now last September, and now 49. So, you know, it slipped. He's dealt with COVID. He's dealt yeah. with, you know, the aftermath of George Floyd, and he's now starting to get beat up on by potential challengers. So it's not surprising. And I think it does mean it's going to be a pretty divisive, to use that yes. word again, but pretty feisty election season.
Mary, you've watched a lot of governors. Where do you kind of put Governor Walz in that ability to, as we look ahead to reelection? Or what did you take away from these polls?
The first thing is we have a long way to go. It's yes. over a year, and in our decades of watching politics, we've learned how time has really shrunk in covering politics and the scandals and the polls and everything. You know, I want to see a poll 40 days out, 60 days out yep. from the election, right? There's so much time, but trends, always looking at trends, and, you know, in decades of covering this, the story does continue to be suburbs and suburban women. That has been the trend in Minnesota. That is where our population is increasing too. And one interesting nuance that I'm going to be looking for, not just kind of the cliche soccer mom, which I happen to be one, yes. suburban soccer mom, but also the exurbs. The census showed us the fastest growing county is Carver County.
Yeah.
Interesting. One of the leading Republican challengers, Dr. Scott Jensen, is from Carver County. So I think that's the area to watch, is not the first or second ring suburbs so much. Those have really now pretty much solidly flipped Republican to Democrat, but second, third, fourth, exurbs. I think that's where this race is going to be won and lost. Yes, the governor still needs monster turnout in urban areas, in Hennepin, in Ramsey, in Minneapolis, in St. Paul. But I think anecdotally, and now we have numerically proof that it is the suburbs and the exurbs where this race will be won and lost.
Laura, if I'm not mistaken, you live in Carver County.
I was just going to raise that. Yes, I live in Chaska, home of Dr. Scott Jensen and at times Mike Lindell. And it's kind of a purple county. I mean, Chaska, where I live, you know, goes back and forth. Some parts of the county are much more conservative. I think when you get closer to Eden Prairie, it's a little more blue. But yeah, it's a very interesting area politically and growing like crazy. So.
And that growth is also part of the growth. It was growing, but part of it is also probably just the changing mentality of people post-pandemic. And we've seen the housing market go crazy. So as we think about the one other thing that I floated Friday in the newsletter was, will Lieutenant Governor Flanagan be on the ticket? And when asked about it, Governor Walz said that was his assumption, but they hadn't made a decision. What have you guys heard? Does that change the ticket? We've seen people switch out lieutenant governors before. Mary?
Yeah, so we actually asked him live on TV on Almanac about this, and I thought his response was a little more affirmative on our air. He said yes. You know, he didn't seem to waffle on it. You know, I know you noted that Lieutenant Governor has not been at as many fundraising events. She certainly seems active, whether they're active together in the same space. Part of this is they were carefully distancing and not appearing together with COVID protocol. So how much do you read into it from that? Yes, we have seen changes before. But as I mentioned before with the demographics, not only does the governor need to perform well in the suburbs and exurbs to win, but he needs to retain very, very, very high voter turnout where the lieutenant governor is from. She used to be a state representative from St. Louis Park, Hennepin County, huge, huge turnout area. So she can help him on his left flank with turnout in those urban areas because he has to run up the score. If he's going to do worse in rural Minnesota, as we expect, because the rural area is going increasingly Republican, he has to run up numbers in the metro.
Laura, when you think about kind of the way in which you've watched administrations in the past, is there anything that stands out? This administration obviously has been front and center because of the pandemic, because of George Floyd, that maybe Minnesotans have seen more of this governor than previous governors?
Well, he's certainly been very, very, very visible during the pandemic. Yes. He's had to, you know, use his executive orders. Yep. So that puts him in the crosshairs of all the critics. And, you know, we just saw even our polls showed just so much division again over vaccine mandates and mask mandates. And it's hard to, you know, sort of get a majority of support on that when you can't get more than 50% on anything. So, right. Yeah.
As other the last thing I want to talk about is just DC, because we all focus a lot on the state capital, but this week and our last guest, Steve Hunnigs, talked a lot about kind of the politics of our delegation on issues of Israel in DC. What are you watching for in the delegation and the personalities of the delegation? Because, you know, they're not going to be we're not losing a congressional seat. They might not be that competitive. And I feel like in a different way, each member is kind of coming into their own. Mary, what do you see from the delegation of kind of how they're rising in stature nationally from Minnesota?
Yeah, I think we'll only really be watching two districts to be competitive, maybe just one. And, you know, we have a fascinating split, such divisions, such diversity in our congressional delegation down the middle with Democrats and Republicans, and just very recently seats flipping. But really, I think we'll be watching the first district down in southern Minnesota, currently represented by Jim Hagedorn, not known for sure if he'll be on the ballot. Yep. And if that's going to be competitive, if Democrats are going to come up with a different candidate who can perform better, who's maybe a little more rural, maybe has better ag credibility down there to really challenge Hagedorn. That'll be interesting. And then, you know, as we creep up into that suburban district in the second, I think that all eyes on that too, it's going to be incredibly competitive.
Laura, have you seen, you know, just the stances that the delegation's taken or more? We had so many kind of younger members for a while that they're now growing into positions of leadership from Emmer to others.
Yeah, but what I was going to say about the delegation is I find the sort of rift between Dean Phillips and Ilhan Omar pretty interesting, which we saw in full display this week, which yep. I'm sure Steve Hunnick's talked about. Ironically, the two of them sit next to each other on the Foreign Affairs Committee. I really want to get that photo, you know, and just see the dynamics there. But, you know, and, you know, Ilhan Omar's district, obviously safe. Yeah. But division within her district among yeah. her Jewish constituency and Palestinian supporters. So, I think that's interesting. And then you've got Dean Phillips as a Jewish member of Congress who's very vocal about funding for Israel. And so that played out this week,
yeah.
you know, when it came down to those bills. But, you know, I don't think we're seeing that Dean Phillips' seat is going to be quite as much of a toss up as it sometimes has been.
No, I would agree. Mary, Laura, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. We'll talk more. We all have our takes, and I will have you back on soon. I'm Blaise Olson. Thanks for listening to Sunday Take. If you missed part of the show, it'll be up tomorrow on the WCCORadio.com website. You can look under the Blaise Olson page, and it'll be there. Until next time, tune in every day at 6:20 for the Morning Take. I'm Blaise Olson. Talk to you next week.
Keeping up with the flood of news every single day can be quite stressful. There is climate change happening. There's the pandemic, labor movements, Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend. Hi, I am Gideon Resnick, host of Crooked Media's What a Day. Each week, Travelle Anderson, Priyanka Arabindi, Josie Duffy, Rice, and I are going to break down the biggest news stories of the day in a way that hopefully doesn't always make you want to cry. New episodes of What a Day drop every weekday at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen on Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are a million reasons South Dakota pheasant hunting is the greatest. The birds, sure, but more than that, it's the camaraderie. It's gravel roads and good company. It's walking a field with a dog out front and your favorite people by your side. That's why South Dakota's the greatest. Make a memory this season in the world's best pheasant country. Enter for a chance to win a South Dakota hunt for you and your crew, plus free Shields gear at huntthegreatestsd.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.